Okay, here we are on the world-famous Cyclone. Built in 1927, it's now celebrating its 70th birthday, and we're on the way up, 85 feet above the Atlantic Ocean and Coney Island. Here on my right as we go up, I can see the Verrazano Narrows Bridge and the Manhattan skyline. There's the Atlantic Ocean, the D train right behind us, and here we go. It says remain seated because we're at the big drop, 85 feet. Here we go!
Vintage audio tape on the Leonard Lopate Show here on WNYC. I'm Richard Hake sitting in for Leonard today. And yes, that was recorded back in 1997 on the anniversary, the 70th anniversary of the cyclone, as I did a story for Morning Edition. That was me recording the sounds of the cyclone and doing some narration, actually writing it. And that brings us to our Please Explain series here at WNYC. It is all about roller coasters. I am joined by Jeffrey Rhodes. He's an associate professor at the School of Mechanical Engineering, an assistant professor at the School of Mechanical Engineering at Purdue University, where he co-teaches a course in the physics of roller coasters called Roller Coaster Dynamics. We're also looking to get your phone calls about if you have a question about a roller coaster or your favorite roller coaster at 646-829-3985. And Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us here on WNYC.
My pleasure, Richard.
Now, I find that there's two types of people. There's people who either really love roller coasters or people who don't like roller coasters. Do you find that true as well?
It certainly is, and luckily with most of the students here, I think they love them.
Well, I was quite fascinated that they actually teach a course, and you co-teach a course in the physics of roller coasters. You know, we think of them as fun, but they're really kind of a scientific marvel, right?
Absolutely. They're a very interesting engineering system that kind of incorporates a number of fields, including mechanical engineering, which is where I work.
Talk about basic. We're going to get into the specifics of roller coasters. We're also going to have another guest join us, hopefully in just a couple of minutes. But we think of, you know, the two basic types of roller coasters. You've got the wooden roller coaster and kind of the metal roller coaster.
Yeah, absolutely. The wooden ones are very classical and traditional and are very much for the feel. You know, you can feel the bumps, and a lot of people like that kind of classic slower ride, but one that tosses you around a little bit in a way that can be quite fun. And then with the steel ones anymore, it's all about speed and height, and so going as fast as possible and as high as possible and setting records and all the thrill that comes with doing so.
We've got our next guest on the line. That's Jake Miller. He's a roller coaster enthusiast and a PhD candidate in the School of Mechanical Engineering studying vibration. He was a student in the Roller Coaster Dynamics course, actually the original inspiration for the course. Jake, thanks for joining us in WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So our Please Explain is all about roller coasters. If you had to tell somebody what a roller coaster is all about, briefly, what would you say?
It's just basically about falling without hitting the ground. That's really my general standard for what a roller coaster is. It's about going fast, falling, not dying, and all those sorts of things. So you feel like you're about to die, but you never really do. And that's really what all a roller coaster is about. And in the strictest definition, a roller coaster is just wheels on a rail track. So you're just on a track, on a wheeled vehicle, going down it.
Let's talk about... Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, let's talk about some of the terms that are used in roller coasters. I mean, acceleration, is that probably the most important thing? Is that the feeling that we get that in the bottom of our stomach when we get butterflies, just the faster that we go as the G-forces hit us?
Well, acceleration can be a number of things. When you get the butterflies in your stomach, that means you actually are floating. So your acceleration is roughly zero, so you're actually falling through the air. Acceleration sort of in a on-track direction, so forwards, is what pushes you back into your seat, and what pushes you upwards. They're all different kinds of acceleration, but those sort of things they're all very interesting to feel, and there's a whole plethora of things that can happen there. But acceleration is just the rate of change of speed more than anything else.
So what is actually happening to our bodies when we're kind of shooting into the air or flying around a curve on a roller coaster?
Well, so I think a number of things can happen there, Richard. Certainly, if you're kind of moving in a straight path, you have some acceleration forward and backwards, and that's not unlike if you're driving along at high speed and slam on your brakes and get pushed back in your seat or flung forward. But when you go around a curve, multiple components of acceleration can act on you. So you have a lateral component, the forward and back. If it has a vertical component to the loop, you're now going to have some acceleration along your torso, which is often one that we like to feel or enjoy in a ride. And then as we go around a curve, we also have some centripetal acceleration, a term that probably many of the listeners are familiar with.
So roller coasters can be different because you can get the one, like we just heard the tape of me riding the Cyclone, which is a historic roller coaster here on in New York on Coney Island, and that one really just bounces you around. I mean, it doesn't go that fast. The hill is not that steep as compared to some of the more modern roller coasters, but that one definitely bounces you around. Then there's other ones where you just go faster and you can go upside down and you go taller and the hills are steeper. I mean, is all of that taken into consideration when designing a roller coaster?
Today, absolutely. I'm not sure when the Cyclone was developed if that was given as much thought as today, but certainly today, not only are we talking about thrill, but thrill and safety, and those are kind of the interplay between those two things is what makes designing these both interesting and fairly technically difficult.
Where are some of the fastest roller coasters these days?
Well, they're located all over, but certainly one that's right up there would be the King Ka in New Jersey, and also the Top Thrill Dragster, a similar ride in Cedar Point, which I think is one of Jake's favorites.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Actually, the fastest roller coaster in the world right now just opened. It's about 150 miles an hour, and it's in Abu Dhabi.
150 miles an hour?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Are there any limits to how much the body can take on these roller coasters?
So far, we haven't really hit it. There's a sort of discrepancy in people's minds. Going faster doesn't necessarily mean more forces, because it's all dependent on the radius of curvature of the track you're on as well. The human limit that we like to put people on roller coasters is about 4 G-forces, which means you're being pressed into your seat at about 4 times your normal weight. And that is all completely controlled by how fast or how large the curve is. So bigger curves and faster speed will lead to the same G-force.
So what is the G-force where the average person would actually not feel too well afterwards?
I don't know the exact statistics, but I believe at about 5 Gs people start blacking out generally. And I think 10 Gs and above can cause actual brain damage and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it might be good to point out that a lot of it depends on which direction it's on the body. So the human can handle a little more acceleration along their torso than they can maybe going side to side. You want to avoid things like whiplash effects.
Yeah, actually, the Cyclone reminds me of getting whiplash. It's also when you talk about roller coasters, we talk about good ones that have good what's called airtime. Explain what airtime is.
Airtime is generally just the feeling of weightlessness you get. If you shoot a cannonball sort of at an angle, you'd expect it to go up and down in sort of a parabola path. And there are a bunch of classes of roller coasters that try and intimidate that just by having a hill in that parabola zero-G shape. And so over the crest of that hill, the train actually follows the path, but as it goes, you sort of continue feeling weightlessness yourself. So that's really what airtime is called. There's also other classes of airtime called ejector airtime, which is where the train's actually pulling you downwards as it goes, and I actually find that more intriguing.
When a typical roller coaster, or roller coasters that have been made in the past, you go up a hill slowly, and you like on the Cyclone. But I've been on some new roller coasters actually at Six Flags at Great Adventure, where they kind of trick you, and you go into a tunnel, and you're actually, I don't know if they're using hydraulics or whatever, but they shoot you as fast as you can up the mountain or up the track, and it really takes you off guard. Is that kind of a new trend in roller coasters these days?
Yeah, starting in about 1996, they started looking into some different technologies to get the energy they needed to do the rest of the ride path. And the first ones that came out were linear induction motors, which are basically electric motors you'd see in pretty much everywhere, but just sort of unrolled. So instead of turning something, they just pull the train along. We've also developed new hydraulic and pneumatic technologies, which compress a gas and then use that to spin a drum or something like that to pull the train along.
Is that like King Ka in Great Adventure? Is that is that what they use there?
That's a hydraulic system, yeah. So in that, they're using hydraulic fluid to compress the nitrogen, and then the hydraulic fluid is thrown through a bunch of turbines that spin a big drum that's attached to a little car that's attached to your car.
I'm speaking to Jeffrey Rhodes, an assistant professor at the School of Mechanical Engineering at Purdue University, where he co-teaches a course in the physics of roller coasters. Jacob Miller is a roller coaster enthusiast and PhD candidate in the School of Mechanical Engineering. He's studying vibration. They are our guest today on our Please Explain series, which is all about roller coasters. And we do have a question from Elaine from Baltimore, who left it on our show page at WNYC.org. We are taking your questions and your calls, by the way. She asks, how does the vibration affect the brain and the other parts of the body like joints and spines? Is that taken into consideration as well when designing a roller coaster?
It is taken into account. Unfortunately, I can't really speak too much to the medical aspects of it. I'm an engineer more than anything else. Mm-hmm. But generally, the intent of a roller coaster designer is to minimize the vibrations as much as possible because those create little G-force spikes that are on top of the normal G-force of the thing. So it can, in very rough roller coasters, have effects on your spine and that sort of things, and there have been cases where injuries have occurred because of just bad track maintenance and that sort of thing. But nowadays we do have a lot of maintenance in place to make sure the track is still smooth, especially on wooden coasters like the Cyclone and that sort of thing. So it's still just an acceptable level of smoothness all in all.
As far as wooden coasters, are they still making wooden coasters? Is there still an interest in them?
Absolutely. Wooden coasters, as I say, are kind of the vintage feel, and I think a lot of people like that. I think kind of the ones, the maybe not super enthusiast, but the ones that enjoy kind of the more toned-down ride but still get a little thrill. And so there's absolutely a home for wooden coasters, and I think there will be for the foreseeable future.
And Jake, you're a roller coaster enthusiast as well as a mechanical engineer. Is that kind of what drew you to the field because of your interest in roller coasters?
Yeah, definitely. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, which is just a short drive away from Cedar Point, which is one of the biggest parks in the nation. And just everything about roller coasters interested me. All those like little clicking noises you hear going up the lift, like everything just trying to keep you safe. And all those little tiny things just to keep you in the car really interested me from a young age.
And have you traveled around the world to visit different roller coasters?
Well, I actually did just, I got off a trip from Spain and we went to Parque Warner there to ride some of theirs, and it was very nice.
We have a comment from Paul from Yonkers. The volcano at King's Dominion in Virginia is far and away my favorite. The takeoff in the dark and then straight up exploding into the daylight feels like a real thrill. Have you been on that roller coaster?
No, I have not. I've heard a great deal about it, and it's a very interesting ride. It was one of the very first with the linear induction motors. It's a legend, but yeah.
We're going to take your phone calls at 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. Ask a question about roller coasters if you have it, or maybe a great memory of riding the Cyclone or one of the other great roller coasters here in the New York area or anywhere in the world for that matter. Let's go to Louise from Brooklyn. Louise, you're on WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I have a question. I grew up in Brooklyn, and I rode both the roller coaster, the one you spoke about, the Cyclone, and the Thunderbolt, which my grandfather was a maintenance worker and a ticket seller for that ride. So we rode it a lot, and we always had this debate going on in Brooklyn, which roller coaster had the steepest first dip. Uh-huh. I contend it was the Thunderbolt, and I was wondering if your guests have any statistics that might compare those two rides.
Well, let's find out. Do you guys know the history of roller coasters as well?
I apologize. I'm though familiar with some of them at Coney Island. I don't have all the statistics with me. I've certainly seen many of them, but certainly a lot of positive feedback on those rides over the years.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling. We can go to now Antonio from New Jersey. Antonio, you're on WNYC.
Yes. First comment I want to make is that the El Toro is the best wooden roller coaster I've ever been on. It rivals steel roller coasters.
Is that where is that? That's at Six Flags Great Adventure?
Yeah, Six Flags, Jersey. And I guess the second comment is my main concern is that I noticed that a lot of the looping roller coasters now have the thin over-the-shoulder harness. And myself and all of my friends, it chops all of our necks and takes away from the experience. And I was wondering if the industry actually recognizes this.
That's an interesting question. Is there consideration taken in? I mean, we have to be safe on these roller coasters, but, you know, sometimes if you're strapped in too much, you kind of lose some of the feeling of it.
Yeah, it's like every new roller coaster. Now, the big harnesses, you know, that kind of pad the side of your head, that's okay. But it's just that thin harness. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. It just chops everyone's neck. I don't know if it's I'm 5'9". I don't know if it has anything to do with my height, but, you know, it's kind of crazy.
Definitely. At King's Dominion, actually, they opened a new ride very recently, which originally opened with very thin straps like you're talking about that were about head level that a lot of people were complaining about. And for the second season it was operating, they actually changed those straps to a fabric-based one that was much more snug, that stretched a little as well. So it didn't have that same problem with the thing, but it was equally safe. So I'm not sure if they're going to try and implement that all across the board. That was just one manufacturer, but it's definitely something they've been looking into and thinking about as the complaints will happen.
For years, the roller coaster was just, you know, the similar to the Cyclone, where a wooden roller coaster where you sit in a train-type car. But in the last couple of years, we have roller coasters where you're standing up. There's roller coasters where you're sitting on a sort of a bike seat. There's other ones where you're strapped in from the top. What are the different types of roller coasters that are being developed these days?
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge variety, and I think all those varieties are really designed to give different feels and different rider experiences. You know, in the early 1900s, there weren't that many theme parks for people to visit, but of course now there's a business model and competition between those models, and so creating, as you said, inverted stand-up roller coasters. You have the ones where you sit down. You now have the new four-dimension roller coasters where not only does the cart move, but you spin about another axis. You know, all these innovations are needed to both push science and engineering and thrill, if you would, for the passenger, but also to be competitive in the amusement market.
Is there a big competition among people who design roller coasters?
Not really. I think they like to see the other people's work and try and challenge themselves to work better, but in terms of competition between them, they're really only working just contract by contract. And most of these companies are so small that they couldn't, even if they wanted to, take all the roller coasters that everybody wanted in one year. So they're really just sort of working not necessarily together, but they're sort of bouncing off each other and making new things and better and brighter ideas.
How many different roller coaster developers are there out there? You mentioned that there's only a few of them. Are there big ones based here in the United States, or are there in Europe?
Well, there are a couple here in the United States, but we dominate the wooden market here. We have companies like Great Coasters International, Great Coasters International and the Gravity Group, both based near Cincinnati, and they do fantastic work all around the world just making great wooden coasters. In terms of steel rides, coming out of the early 90s, or the late 90s, excuse me, the German and Swiss companies started to dominate the market, and they still have a pretty big hold on it. And the biggest two companies are Intamin and Bulliger & Mabillard, and they're both from Switzerland at this point. But there are a couple other companies in Germany, and there are some small United States firms working on steel coasters as well.
What's known about the first roller coasters? Do we know where they actually first began, where we first started shooting people on a train down a hill?
Yeah, so a lot of the debate about this topic, like many things in history that maybe didn't get as well recorded as more historical events, but most people point towards early slides in Russia, starting in kind of ice sled and then progressing on to systems with wheels. And then when we started seeing
sort of
more,
like a bobsled?
Exactly. And you know, Catherine the Great, as legend has it, actually installed one in one of the palaces at one point. And then eventually it switched over to mainland Europe. And in France, you started to see the first looping coaster developed, and it would later move to England. And then eventually the American expansion that many of your listeners would be familiar with.
I'm speaking with Jacob Miller and Jeffrey Rhodes, a professor at the School of Mechanical Engineering at Purdue University, for this week's Please Explain. We're talking about roller coasters. We're also taking your calls at 646-829-3985. You can also leave a comment on this show page at our website, which is WNYC.org. We're going to have more right after a break.
You're my Coney
It's the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. I'm Richard Hake sitting in for Leonard today. He returns on Monday. It's Please Explain, and today's Please Explain is all about roller coasters, everything you wanted to know about them. We have Jeffrey Rhodes, an assistant professor at the School of Mechanical Engineering at Purdue University, where he co-teaches a course in the physics of roller coasters. And Jake Miller is a roller coaster enthusiast and PhD candidate in the School of Mechanical Engineering. He's studying vibration. And we want to hear from you as well. Call us at 646 829 929-3985 for your question about roller coasters or your favorite experience on a roller coaster. We heard that song from Coney Island. Coney Island kind of has this nostalgic feel, especially here in the New York area, for roller coasters. Do you think it kind of helped shape where roller coasters were going throughout the United States?
Absolutely. I think it sent the trend. I think one example of that is the loop-de-loop, early looping ride that really set the bar for looping rides until perhaps even the 1970s. There just wasn't a lot of development done in the interim. And so certainly setting the early trend, and not only that, but the business model as well, as you look at the modern amusement park, certainly is a direct derivative of what was accomplished at Coney Island early on.
Okay, we're going to take some calls now. Patrick is calling from Brooklyn. Patrick, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
You have a great question that I've always asked this myself. Why don't you ask our guests here?
Well, I, too, grew up in Detroit. We went to Sandusky, Ohio for Cedar Point. And when you're waiting in line for the ride and you may be the first people in line, do you go to the front car or the back car? I always felt like the back car gave, like, better whiplash and the front car was maybe more fright looking down that hill, but is there like a difference in like effects engineering wise?
I think that's a great question.
No, it's absolutely a great question. It's something that we cover in the course here at Purdue. And yeah, absolutely. There is a big difference. It has a lot to do with the fact that the speed at which you pass a certain point on the track is a little different if you're in front and back. And so that leads to a little different ride. And people always ask me, well, would you sit in the front or the back? And I said, well, it really depends what elements you like to feel the most. As you go over the top of a hill, you get a different feel than if you go down into a dip. And which one of those you experience more acceleration changes depending on element. And so it is a very different ride. It's not just perception, though that certainly plays a role as well.
So I guess that means you have to ride the ride at least twice to get the full experience.
Absolutely. You do truly get a different experience on the ride with every different seat on the ride. So yeah, if you want to experience it all, keep riding.
I'm just kind of looking at our callers here, and I've noticed most of them are male. There's a big question about whether males and females, who likes roller coasters better?
I think it's roughly the same. It's
okay.
Hard to say unilaterally whether or not one sex likes it more.
No study done on that, I guess.
Not that I've aware of.
Okay. How about Kevin from Brooklyn? You're on WMYC.
Hello?
Yes, Kevin, you're on the air.
Okay. I had a question for the gentleman. I mean, in regards to the coasters of the future, are the limitations in making bigger and better ones due to design challenges, or are they due to the human physiology, the body's inability to handle, you know, greater speeds or turns or anything like that?
That's an excellent question. I think in reality there's some limits on both. When you talk about certain elements and going higher, you start to run into things like structural design issues without
okay.
building very large structures. But at the same time, you know, more acceleration is certainly limited largely by the human. And so it really depends on what element you're talking about. But as you can tell, it's probably not going to be an easy design problem. And that's what makes it fun from our point of view.
Kevin, thanks a lot for
okay.
your call.
Thank you.
Also, another question. Has the safety standards of design of roller coasters, have they changed drastically over the years, or as technologies increased, have they been relaxed a little bit?
No, definitely.
Okay. Go ahead, Jake.
They've definitely increased over the years, certainly since the 20s. There's a fairly notorious story about a man who was riding a ride on a pier, got ejected into the water, swam back, and demanded his full ride. So back in the day, it was sort of hit or miss on whether or not the ride was completely safe. Nowadays, there is no federal body overseeing stuff, but on a state level, everything is very well inspected, very well maintained, and that sort of thing. And also on a design level, most of these rides are designed to fit the German TUV standards, which are far and above anything that should cause for any concern anywhere. So there's definitely been a giant leap in safety.
And I think it's worth pointing out that for high-speed piece of machinery where there's high speeds and high accelerations present, roller coasters tend to be very safe from an engineering perspective.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Cleo calling from Morristown, New Jersey. Cleo, you're on WNYC.
Thanks for taking my call. The one thing I want to tell you is that when I was about 13, this is the Second World War, the beginning, 43, we used to get fixed up and we would meet the young sailors who were wonderful, and the idea was to go on the rides. And they always were thrilled. They said, sure, we want company. And one time it was Easter, and I took my sister's hat. She didn't know it. I was all dressed up. And I still like the Cyclone, but I lost the hat. The screams were unbelievable. We never found the hat. But that is a memory I will never forget. And through the years with my kids and grandkids, I don't think there's anything else like the Cyclone.
Hey, Cleo, do you still ride roller coasters?
Oh, yes. In fact, we go to sometimes Wildwood. We haven't been to Six Flags, but there's the, I'm trying to think, there's one, the Mighty Mouse, is it, or Wildlife, but it's not exactly a roller coaster, but I'm game. If they want to go, I'm willing to go. I love it.
That's wonderful.
Great. Thanks so much for calling, Cleo.
You're welcome.
Amy in Ridgewood left this comment on our show page. I'm from Pittsburgh, and Kennywood has some of the great old-fashioned wooden roller coasters that she's been riding since she was a kid. It's the original Thunderbolt, but there's also the Racer. Her favorite, though, is the Jackrabbit, where the double dip lifts you out of your seat and you get that fantastic lift in your stomach. The newer roller coasters give me a headache every time I try one. Do you guys find a lot of that most people are just nostalgic for those old roller coasters, just like I like the Coney Island Cyclone?
Well, definitely. I mean, usually the best memories of your life are always the ones when you're in the prime time. So, and a lot of people like to ride roller coasters in those times of their lives. So there's definitely a bond formed. Like for me, especially with Millennium Force at Cedar Point, I have a ton of great memories going there, riding with high school friends and now college friends, of just great rides we had and great times we had at the park.
So if I had to ask you right now, each of you, which is your favorite roller coaster?
Well, I'm definitely down for Millennium Force. I actually just went this weekend, and it was riding the best it ever has, or I've ever seen it so far. It was getting great airtime over every hill, and it's got a 310-foot drop, goes to 94 miles an hour, and it's a fantastic ride.
So is it different each time? You mentioned that you got a good ride this time. Mm-hmm. Is it just so big and so massive and large that, depending upon the weather conditions, the ride could be different?
Yeah, you nailed it. There's a lot of stuff going on with the weather. It's hard to predict whether or not it'll be a fast ride or a slow ride, but the temperature and the weather change how the track is, change the friction and all that sort of thing. And it's really hard to predict, but on that day it all worked out for us, and we were getting great airtime and great speed all throughout.
Jeffrey, do you have a favorite roller coaster?
I always joke I like the ones where my heart's still beating at the end. So.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a couple more calls. How about Vic calling from New Jersey?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, yes. I was wondering, because roller coasters must be very expensive to manufacture and to, you know, just to design, do companies build scale models of these things? So somewhere are there rooms filled with, like, almost like big toys?
Hmm. Good question.
No. Generally, roller coasters are built because of the way, well, because of physics, really. You can't have a scale model that'll behave in the exact same way as a full-scale model. The gravity just doesn't scale the same way. So you couldn't have the same model go through at the same scale speed the whole time. And that's really the big problem. Most of the time nowadays, they just run simulations on computers to get the best guess on what it's going to look like and that sort of thing. But there are definitely mock-ups made for the park.
Vic, thanks so much for your call. Let's go. This is a question that I actually have as well, but let's have Irene from Rockland County ask it.
Hi. I was at Six Flags over the summer on a very hot day, and they shut down a lot of the roller coasters, saying that there were mechanical issues because of the heat. So I was just wondering what causes that, and should I be scared to go on it again after it's opened up again? Thank you.
Great question.
So, you know, I think as Jake alluded to earlier, the ride conditions can change depending on temperature and other factors, humidity and et cetera. And so, you know, if they open the ride, I think I would feel very comfortable being there safe. Parks tend to be very cautious and conservative when making those judgments. And so that's not much of an issue. But certainly, yes, it does affect rides. And when they think conditions are such, they do appropriately shut them down.
I do notice a lot of times in different parks, roller coasters especially will shut down. Do you think that might just even be a staffing issue? They don't have enough staff members to probably man all the rides throughout the park, so they have to shut that ride down for a little while?
Generally, at major parks, they're pretty much on the ball with regards to staffing. Most of the problems and most of the shutdowns that ride have are usually just because of some small electronic component that got confused or something that overheated, and they need to wait for it to reset, or they need to make sure the ride computer is all okay with everything that's going on in the ride. Because if the ride computer loses track of a train, that's a very dangerous scenario. So they need to make sure the ride computer knows where every train is at all the times and that everything's in sync with what they expect.
So describe this computer that kind of controls some of the modern roller coasters these days.
Okay, it sort of works just basically, there are sensors on the track to detect where the trains are at each time. And the way the system works is if a train were to grind to a halt for whatever reason, like a wheel falling off or something like that, which is very rare, but if it happens, the train would grind to a halt, and the train behind it would have to be able to stop somewhere for the ride to be safe. So to make that happen and to increase the capacity, they have brake runs sometimes halfway through the ride, which are activated by a computer automatically if the block in front of it isn't clear and that sort of thing. So basically the ride computer is just there to tell you that all the ride systems are working. It monitors the status of the lift motor and that sort of stuff, and just make sure that nothing is going to bump into anything else.
Jake Miller is a roller coaster enthusiast, also a PhD candidate in the School of Mechanical Engineering. Jeffrey Rhodes, an assistant professor at the School of Mechanical Engineering at Purdue University, where he co-teaches a course in the physics of roller coasters. And that's what Please Explain is all about here on WNYC right now. We're also taking your phone calls about your experiences on roller coasters or question at 646-829-3985. You can leave a question on our show page as well at WNYC.org. Let's go to Judy calling from New York City. Judy, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, hi. I couldn't help but call, and I have a very special place in my heart for the cyclone in Coney Island because my great uncles, Jack and Irving Rosenthal, had the cyclone built in 1927.
Oh, wow.
They were also the owners of Palisades Park, and so I spent a good deal of my childhood at Palisades Park, where they also had a cyclone.
So how many times would you say you rode the cyclone?
Well, the cyclone in Coney Island, I rode mostly as an adult, and probably I'd say I've been on it only 10 times. But the cyclone in Palisades Park, I was probably only on it 2 times because we would get a free pass to go on all the rides at Palisades Park. We would meet with my great uncle, and he'd give us this little pass, and we were allowed to go on all the rides except for the cyclone, because it was considered dangerous for kids to ride on it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an unusual situation, since I had free rides for everything else.
Judy, thanks so much for your call.
Okay, thanks.
I remember my very first roller coaster ride. I think I was in third or fourth grade, and it was the Dragon Coaster at Rye Beach Playland in Westchester County. Let's go to... my computer is frozen up a little bit, and I can't go to my caller that I would like to. Maybe we can go to number one. That is Eileen, I believe, in New Jersey.
Yes, it is.
Hello, you're on WMYC.
Hi, yes, good afternoon. My family, we love riding roller coasters. We go to different parks on the East Coast to ride them. We're all ACE members, which is American Coaster Enthusiasts. And I just want to ask you a quick question regarding the comparison between Kindica and Trop Drop Dragster. They're quite similar, but they're very different in the harnessing and the way that people are held in. Is that taken into consideration when making the coaster? Because in Kindica, you're going to have this huge strap over your shoulders, whereas in Trop Drop Dragster, it's just a bar lap, but it's essentially the same ride. Can you comment on that?
Yes, definitely. The Trop Drop Dragster was actually built first, and the lap bar you're talking about, I love it, actually, because it gives you a lot of freedom of movement. But unfortunately, it requires a very sharp angle that it has to pinch you sort of in your pelvis and your leg region. It has to keep you down in the seat like that. So for people of a larger size, it doesn't work quite as well, and it's difficult to get a couple of people on the ride. So that's why they switched to the over-the-shoulder restraints like El Toro, because those are more accommodating. They still offer pretty much the same ride experience, a little less freedom, but it allows a lot more people to ride.
Thank you so much for your call. We're going to try to get one more call in here. Hillary is calling from Brooklyn. You're on WNYC.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
First of all, I love roller coasters, and I don't know if these count as roller coasters, but I love the free fall kind of coaster drop, like Tower of Terror.
Airtime. It's called Airtime.
Okay. As a kid, I used to sort of fantasize about living on a roller coaster. I know that sounds silly, but now as an adult, I can't really tolerate it at the same way. I can only do a couple here and there. Is it true that as we get older, it's more difficult to tolerate roller coasters?
I think that's a great question.
That is. I guess someone maybe a little older than Jake, I can certainly say my tolerance seems to be going down. But as for a scientific explanation for that, I must be honest, I don't have one for you, unfortunately.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Well, we've been speaking with Jeffrey Rhodes, an assistant professor at Purdue University's School of Mechanical Engineering, where he co-teaches a course in the physics of roller coasters, and Jake Miller, a PhD candidate at Purdue, studying vibration and a roller coaster enthusiast as well. We've been talking all about roller coasters on today's Please Explain. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Leonard returns for Monday's show. He'll look at how a U.S. attorney was able to unravel a major Colombian cocaine trafficking cartel, which was responsible for bringing 60% of the drug into the U.S. at the time. Then, musician and songwriter John Hiatt discusses his new album, Dirty Jeans and Mudslide Hymns. Also, a look at the new novel, Miss Timmins' School for Girls, about life at a British boarding school in the hills of Western India. Plus, Amy Cortez on why she thinks investors would be better off putting their money behind the corner store than with Wall Street financial institutions. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from William Miesmer. Debbie Fountain is at the audio controls. I'm Richard Hake, in for Leonard Lopate. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend.